I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Kevin Chong joins me again. The author has recently published a new novel, The Plague. It is a modern retelling of Camus' classic novel set in a not-too-distant Vancouver where an infectious disease forces quarantine. The book looks at various themes, chiefly how Vancouver copes in a crisis with its class inequality. I'll get Mr. Chong to tell us about his characters, the city as he sees it, and the various themes of survival, human suffering, and resilience. I've started the book and am enjoying it a great deal. Kevin Chong is the author of 6 books, including Northern Dancer, My Year of the Racehorse, Beauty Plus Pity, Neil Young Nation, and Barakanova. He teaches at UBC's Creative Writing Department and SFU's Writer's Studio. His website is at kevinchong.ca. This new book is published by Arsenal Pulp Press. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Kevin Chong. Mr. Chong, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
It's been a while since I've seen you, but you've been busy, I guess. You have a daughter now, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, she's 3. She celebrated her 3rd birthday a couple of weeks ago. And, I work 2 jobs, and I guess socializing is one of those things I need to sort of cut out of my schedule. Watching sports, too, is another one. But other than that, I have been unfortunate in not being able to run into you more often.
Yeah.
But it's nice to keep track of you online, you know, and touch a base here and there.
Yeah, that's the thing about being online, whether it be Facebook and Twitter or Twitter, is you don't really need to see people because you're really you're following their lives literally, right?
Yeah. That's a nice element, you know, especially when you fall into this baby hole. You know, like I remember when my daughter was first born, we lived like right in a very busy part of Main Street, and that was socializing, right? Just going to run an errand and running into people because
yeah.
You know, like meeting up someone with someone for dinner and or having a beer with somebody was just sort of like you know, launching a shuttle to the moon or something. It was just that. Overwhelming in your head, so it's just nice to keep track of people in these sort of small ways.
Yeah. You mentioned working 2 jobs, and one of the places that you work at is the Creative Writing Department at UBC. That's been in the news a lot. The last little bit. What do you say to people who are curious as to what you think's happened there over the last couple of years?
Well, you know, there's something, I try to answer as sort of definitely as possible, especially to people who are like prospective students or people I don't know very well, because there are a lot of conflicting sides, and I really don't have all that much information, you know. And so I don't want to sort of speak out of turn, and I have people who I feel sort of close to on both sides of the sort of divide, people who feel like something egregious was done by Stephen Galloway and some who feel like he's been wronged. And I don't, like, at least publicly, I don't really want to weigh in and really hurt anyone. I don't know if people have been hurt by this already.
Mm-hmm.
And so try to focus on the students, and on helping people get past this and trying to sort of, like, foster community with other people, you know. Like, I know it's hard, though, sometimes, you know. Like, people want you to be on one side strongly or the other. And I'm just not going to really publicly do that, you know.
In terms of as a place to work, I mean, because we've heard about it and on the news a lot, and a lot of people are talking about it. It as a place to work, and as a place to say study as a student, it has changed, hasn't it?
As a place to work, as a place to study, yeah. You know, anytime you have a new chair, anytime you have like a lot of turnover in terms of support staff, things do change. And I think we've been in flux, but I think we're out of it, you know, which is great because we've been a really sort of capable new chair, Alex Olean, who's taken over, who's, you know, really sort of breathed some fresh air into the situation. And, you know, for better and for worse, like the students who had to deal with all that terrible stuff in the fall of 2015. A lot of them graduated, you know, and so we're hopefully, you know, like, hopefully we'll have students who will come in without any of the lingering after effects of this this catastrophe, really, this debacle.
Now, this book, The Plague, as I told you before we started, I'm enjoying it a great deal. One needn't have read, say, Camus before to get into this, right?
No. You know, it's meant for people to not have read the original. Like, I think it's a good sort of side-by-side comparison. I know a lot of reviewers have been sort of prompted to read both, which I feel sort of bad about, you know. It's enough work to read one book, but to read two, get to do your review, and get paid peanuts is a real undertaking, you know? No, you don't have to, but I think in some ways it sort of, for me, it sets up the expectation of what the book is about, you know? And I think it gives some people the wrong idea that it's going to be this sort of epidemic thriller, you know? And which it isn't, you know? Like, the Camus book is very philosophical, and once the plague hits the city and the town is quarantined, what happens is sort of what has happened before. People just go on with their lives, you know. And that's kind of what I wanted to describe, you know, and how I would see something like that unfolding in Vancouver.
Now, well, we'll talk about what happens in the book and what happens to Vancouver in a sec. But because I haven't read Camus, probably anything that he's written, how old were you when you first read him?
I was 18. I very vividly remember reading him in Arts One at UBC. And for those who don't know, Arts One is a foundational reading, foundational literature, history, and philosophy course at UBC, where you're introduced to many of the classics. And for me, reading Camus alongside, you know, Dostoevsky's The Trial and Kafka, Dostoevsky's The Brothers Karamazov and Kafka's The Trial really imprinted on me what serious literature was, you know, and what serious literature should try to do, which is to address the big topics in life. It really had, it made a really a big impression on me.
And then a couple of years ago, I guess you guys were rearranging your house and your books, and you just happened to see a copy of his book, and you picked it up again, didn't you?
Yeah, you know, I've toyed with the idea of trying to rewrite books in the past. You know, I always thought that was a great sort of, like, it was like, you know, like having a cake mix or something, you know, just to ride off the cachet of a book. And you know, my wife was moving around books, and it was like it was a combination of just seeing that book and the time. It was right after the U.S. election that sort of disappointed so many people, and we were in the middle of a very bleak fall, led to an even bleaker winter. And there's this sort of pessimism that was in the air, and this, like, this sort of prolonged melancholy that really made it, writing about the plague and the idea that it entertains, the idea of, you know, why we persist in spite of hopelessness, that really resonated with me.
And so the Vancouver that you portray in the book, I mean, it's one that's in the not-so-distant future. I guess for people listening who haven't picked up the book, what is it like? I mean, it seems like a cautionary tale, but at the same time, it's not cynical.
No, I don't think of it as being a cynical book, but I have it set in the near future because, I wanted to write about the plague as in some ways, not a literal thing, but as a metaphor for what's happening in Vancouver, for the way, you know, when one sort of crisis is left to fester, it sometimes seems like it disappears, but it just sort of takes a new form.
Mm.
And in this book, it's the near future, and in some ways, the development that we see in the city and the inequality we see in the city has sort of pushed forward. You know, one of the things that I wanted to do in this novel was I decided I couldn't write about this sort of metaphorical plague alongside a very real crisis, like the opioid crisis mm-hmm. in Vancouver. And so what I imagined and why I set it forward was because I wanted to imagine, you know, what would happen if things were left unchecked, you know. And I sort of tongue-in-cheek suggest the opioid crisis has been recently concluded. And I don't really say it explicitly, but why it concluded is that everyone died. You know, the downtown east side was sort of just annexed over and turned into a shopping district. And so instead of, you know, addressing the problem, people just let sort of nature, you know, like the free market economy run its course. And so the plague itself is a metaphor for, you know, letting things sort of fester and one epidemic, you know, sort of transmuting into another.
And you know, I'm thinking, because we're all talking about this earthquake that's about to happen that we can expect here in Vancouver shortly and just how woefully ill-prepared we are for that. How does Vancouver react to a plague, say?
Well, in this city, in the story I tell, Vancouver, there's a quarantine that's imposed in the city, and, you know, the measures that are taken don't quite work, you know, like, so at first people joke about it, and then they get really panicky, and then they sort of resume their normal lives in some ways. There's a kind of an air of lawlessness that sort of takes over the city, where people feel like the city has their hands full, and so there's this underground economy that happens. There's like a smuggling trade that occurs. And this is stuff that was inspired by the original, you know. Mm-hmm. But we see that, you know, in the city right now, you know, where people are making do by through illicit means, through sort of not strictly legal means.
That's happened in the city throughout its history, hasn't it? I mean,
yeah.
we live in denial about that as well.
Yeah. You know, I was just talking to Andy Yan a couple of days ago about shantytown. We both see something like that being perhaps in Vancouver's not so distant future if the housing crisis continues as it is. And it was something that happened in the past. You know, according to Andy Yan, it was in the 1930s.
Looking at Vancouver as you have, not only having lived here for most of your life, almost all of your life, and looking at it into the future as you do with this book, The Plague, does it worry you at all? I guess it worries all of us, doesn't it?
It worries all of us, you know, and to some extent I feel like inoculated from it, to borrow another sort of disease term, because you know, I have a mother who owns a house in the West Side, you know, and that's my sort of security blanket. But I'm still a renter, you know, and I don't see like a possible future for my children in the city, you know, and I think that is very depressing. This is a city I love, and it's a city that's changed a lot in ways that are pretty positive, but in also a lot of very sort of nasty ways too.
When you write in the book about I guess our basest impulses, where does that come from? I mean, one wonders, does the writer, when it's a novel, when it's fiction, does the writer, say, employ stuff that he's not, I don't know if experience is the right word, but the stuff that he's grown to understand over the years into his work?
I think there's like a range of possible lives it could have lived. The novelist sort of has the opportunity to just take a couple of steps from the life they do live into these sort of possibilities. I think some writers even go further. You know, they do some deep research and imagine what it's like to live like in another planet, or imagine what it's like to be somebody whose background is completely different from their own. But for me, and especially in writing this book, it wasn't an extrapolation that took me that far. It was like a few steps removed. And writing about your basic impulses, you know, in our sort of subconscious, we run the gamut of noble impulses and base impulses, and in some ways, like, I think recognizing that and expressing that is one way that allows us to behave honorably, to try to explore the repercussions of acting poorly.
I guess over the years, Kevin, when I've talked to writers like yourself, I kind of look at their novel as, say, the product of some thinking that they've done on not just a topic, but say on various themes. And when you write about such a dire circumstances in terms of a plague, did you come away with some wisdom as to who we are when say confronted by some great emergency?
I'm not sure if I came away with any wisdom about it. You know, I came away with a feeling that I thought through the world around me, and I threw in an imaginative conceit, and I used that conceit to some ways just sort of represent the world we live in, you know, through a different lens, from a different angle, and I use that conceit in some ways to more fully explore aspects of my own experience. And by having done that, I don't feel like I arrived with any wisdom except maybe the sort of experience of having written the book and of put those observations and ideas in a sort of dramatic context. Maybe that's wisdom, you know, this sort of, maybe a kind of embodied wisdom.
And then to get to that, I guess, are you a writer who writes through, say, what they're worried about or their fears?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's got to be some sort of tension in your writing. And sometimes writers, I think a lot of writers explore, you know, their fears, and others, you know, maybe plot for, you know, escapism, you know. But for me, yeah, it's definitely, you know, things that intrigue me, things that give me pause.
The other thing that I was thinking about as I was preparing for a chat, I have all six of your books here at the house.
And, that's very kind.
I looked. I'm not finished The Plague, of course, but and I've read, I guess, three of them. The first two I haven't read, but I looked through them. And as you know, I've been reading you for a long time. And I remember we used to write in the Vancouver Sun. And
that was a long time ago.
Yeah, that's when I first encountered you, and that's when I first began to admire your work.
Yeah, thank you.
And looking at your book specifically. These six books. You're a writer who, I don't know how to put this, they're all unique. They're dissimilar from one another. When you set out to write a book, I mean, are you conscious of that?
Yeah, to some extent. You know, like, there are two books about horse racing. I think that's the ones that have the most in common, but the two books about horse racing, one's a memoir and one's a
biography. Yeah, they're very different books itself. But yeah.
And... you know, there are sort of themes that you can find within those books. You know, quite a few deal with Vancouver. Quite a few have, you know, parent relationships. You know, a couple, you know, deal with, you know, being an immigrant. You know, being of Asian extraction. You know, like there's things you can tease out of that. But no, I've never really wanted to do the same thing over and over again. You know, and you know, there's always variations on a theme and. Maybe my variations are a bit, like, wider than others, you know. I can't, for instance, you know, think of, you know, writing a detective series, writing seven books with the same character. Maybe I haven't found the right character yet. You know, there's some writers like Henning Mankell who I really admire who do that. I think there was this desire not to do things the same way, and I think that's in some ways my downfall, because I think of the one key to success in being an author can be just sort of doing the same thing over and over again and sort of making enough of a variation that readers are interested, but at the same time readers know what they're getting, you know. And I think there are writers who are very successful who do that, and the publishers know how to market that too.
Yeah, there's no way really to describe a Kevin Chung book, is there?
You know, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I think sometimes people will point to like some sort of humor, or they'll point to somebody who writes about Vancouver. You know, like there are different ways you can sort of come about it. You know, and I'm trying my best to confound those sort of expectations.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, I mentioned the thing in the Sun. I mean, that was some brilliant stuff about yourself, and about say the age that you were in at the time, and those concerns. At the same time, you know, your travel writing is brilliant.
Okay.
And so, I mean, yeah, you are someone, I guess, who's hard to pin down. There's a line at the beginning of the book that I guess sort of speaks to that, and you're talking about people that live here. And this is the line: they lived here because they were from here, although no one believed anyone was originally from here. Is that something that you contend with regularly?
As somebody who, you know, that's my identity in as a Vancouverite to start with. You know, like my great grandfather is buried at Mountain View Cemetery. You know, and at the same time, I'm a first-generation immigrant. I was born in Hong Kong. You know, it's interesting. So I think of myself as a first-generation Vancouverite and a fourth-generation Vancouverite.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and there's that sort of question. You know, are you from here? You know, like where are you from? You know, like we all get that. You know, as you know, non-white Vancouverite.
Right.
You know, but we have as little claim to the city as anyone who's sort of non-Indigenous does, you know, or this area, this region.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I think about quite a bit.
Yeah, and so, I mean, we're about the same age. That's something that doesn't really go away, does it?
No, but I think that's good. You know, I guess, you know, it's thinking about where you're from and how that defines you, you know, is a rich source, a rich vein of material for writing.
Yeah, I guess the problem that I encounter is what defines me, say, is not how I think of myself, but it's trying not to get what other people define me as to make it my identity, which I think,
you know,
it so often happens, right, with anybody, right?
That's really true, you know, and as somebody who's, like, of Asian extraction living in this area, living in the city, you know, like, we all have to decide to ourselves how much we're going to push back
mm-hmm.
on that, letting other people impose their assumptions on you. And I think a lot of people push back as a political stance of trying to make things better for other people. But other people want to just be who they are and not let other people sort of define themselves, you know. And I sort of, you know, oscillate between the two. And I think about the fact that, you know, what I encounter is, you know, much less severe than what somebody who is, you know, transgender might have to experience, or somebody who is, you know, of... you know, somebody who's black, for instance,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think that's, they have a much harder road to hoe than I do as somebody who's part of, I guess, maybe the most significant minority in the city's history, you know, in terms of visible minorities.
The other thing that I'm thinking about as I'm reading your book is because of Vancouver that you present is it's real. You know, it's real to a lot of people in terms of the urgency. You spoke a moment ago about living here and it not being, say, sustainable for your kids. What's kept you here over the years, and do you think that'll remain the same in the near future, say?
I was in Toronto a couple of weeks ago, and I was talking to a friend who described Vancouver rights, people who were born there or grew up there, as the least transplantable people, and because we are not used to any sort of extremes in weather. Not too cold, not too hot, not too humid. We have a higher tolerance for, you know, cloudiness, I think.
Yeah.
But that's about it. And that's my very glib answer to that one to some extent, because and it's true, though. You know, I'm used to the weather. You know, what keeps me here is, I think at first, like, family connections. Well, now it's family connections, but at first I think it was this inability really to just move somewhere and reinvent myself anew, and how difficult that is because of being someone who's introverted, you know. Mm-hmm. And my version of introversion, you know, means I can speak in public, but it makes it hard for me to kind of like make new friends from being the new person, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what keeps me now is like family connections, work, you know. A feeling that, you know, if I move somewhere else, I would still be writing about Vancouver, but it'd be Vancouver from 1977 to 2018.
Mm-hmm.
That I would be able to write about a new place, because it would take me like 20 years to write about the new place, at which point I would be, retirement age, you know. And so I think that's one reason why I stay.
Yeah, I was telling our mutual friend Charlie Demers recently when I talked to him about his book. I mean, because it does talk about this place. It is a terrible place, the one that we complain about a lot, but it's not a bad place, is it?
No. There are things that are really great about the city, and there's a reason why a lot of people like it so much. There's a reason why it's never been cheap to live here. It's definitely not a perfect place. It's definitely not a place that, you know, we should feel smug about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there are wonderful aspects to it, you know, and I feel very much defined by living here.
As I told you before we started, I'm enjoying the book a great deal. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you again, and
yeah.
I didn't realize that it's been over 3 years since we've. I guess even talk together, even seen each other. Let's not make it another 3 years.
No, we should make plans for lunch at some point soon.
Indeed. Congratulations on this book. Continued good luck with it, Kevin.
Okay. Thank you, Joseph.
The book is called The Plague. It's published by Arsenal Pulp Press. Its author, Kevin Chong, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.